Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Morning, Whitey.
Good morning to you, Daniel.
Good morning to you.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. How's your weekend?
No, it was pretty quiet, to be perfectly honest.
You would have gone over and above yesterday with Mother's Day activities for Em. Over and above, I'm sure.
It was pretty good. Pretty good. It was sort of done over 2 days because...
Extravaganza.
Well, we had Auskick and under nines yesterday morning, so that sort of took out any sort of breakfast activity, all that sort of stuff. So we did that on Saturday. And then it was quite good in the afternoon because Emma thought for Mother's Day she'd like to take her kids to the football. So that was fantastic.
What football?
Hawthorn West Coast. So that's what she did. So they went Auskick, under nines, Hawthorn West Coast.
Oh,
and some would suggest the under-9s game was a better spectacle than the Hawthorn West Coast game.
Oh, not if you're a West Coast fan. They were pretty clinical.
You reckon?
They're pretty good. Oh. Once I got the ball forward to centre, they're pretty good.
Anyway, so that was that was our weekend. Very quiet.
Right. A lot of football activity in your world. Possibly unsurprisingly. Not a great game to be taking the kids to for a Hawthorn supporter on Mother's Day.
It's a great game because not many people there. You get a park... in the car park. It's the 1 o'clock game, so it's perfect for the kids because they get home at a reasonable time.
Your kids get hostile, though, when things don't go their way.
And that happened yesterday.
That was always going to be a challenge against the Mighty Eagles.
Well, the unfortunate reality, Daniel, is now, as a Hawthorn supporter, that every game is pretty much an ordeal.
Yes, that's true. That's true. A long year ahead for the Brown and Gold followers, no doubt about that. Wonder how Adam Romanaskis is feeling about the world of football at the moment. He is a former Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars. And he's back again, looking very sharp, very dapper, almost, on a Monday morning. Good morning, Rama.
Yes, good morning. Happy Mother's Day yesterday. We didn't say that on Friday, I don't think.
No, we didn't.
When we left, so but happy Mother's
Day.
Well,
it's sort of 2 days out. It's sort of, you know, it's a long way.
Yeah.
It's a long one to be doing.
What did you go with yesterday morning?
Well, yesterday morning, no, there was an absence of the mother. She took off.
Right.
She took off. She was at the market catching up with her mother. And then there was some junior football requirements, and then there was some employment opportunities for me.
Oh.
So we didn't actually see each other until about 3 o'clock.
Right.
That's not unusual for us.
Yes.
3 o'clock was the first sighting of the loved one. And a very low-key dinner for the world champ yesterday.
Nice.
A little bit of Sherpa action on Netflix last night. Very good.
Have you seen
Sherpa?
No.
Watch Sherpa on Netflix. My goodness.
I went to the corn fritters yesterday morning.
Did you make them?
Yeah.
You made them?
Yes, you made them.
I did.
From scratch?
From scratch.
Did you?
Mm.
How were they? Before I ask that again. Is this the first time you've made corn fritters? Okay, so on debut for Mother's Day.
Yes, yes.
This is a big call.
Yeah. I usually go the French toast.
Yes, yes.
The wife likes that.
That's good.
But I know she likes the corn fritters, so I went the corn fritters. First batch, you know, you experiment.
Yes.
Just with the pan and a bit of butter in there. And they were okay. Second batch, yeah, nailed it.
Nailed it. Well
yeah,
done.
Nailed it.
That's courageous.
Yeah, I thought so.
That is courageous.
Yeah, I thought so.
A new dish on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave a legacy of, here he goes again cooking something new on Mother's Day. Yeah. It's not what we want.
My two elder sons... You know, just you expect a little bit of help. Nothing, zero. Zero from. So they just take the plate up.
Oh, well, at least there's something.
Oh, yeah.
At least there's something. They've seen MasterChef plate up.
But it's a long day. It's a long day, Mother's Day, isn't it?
Well, if you're allowed to be.
Well,
if you don't see it till 3 p.m., it's not that long.
We sort of went to the football, then we went to one side of the family, then the other side of the family, then you don't walk in the door till 9 o'clock.
Yes. Well, if you're doing the whole family thing,
mm.
Yeah, no, that wasn't part of our regime yesterday. They were busy. Mm. They had other plans. It's not a bad result for us.
Not a bad result.
Not a bad result for us. Now, there's a bit happening in the world of sport across the weekend. Before we get to all of that and your calls at 1-300-652-927, congratulations, Rama.
Yes. I wasn't expecting it from you, to be honest.
Oh, no.
No.
I will acknowledge excellence when it's performed.
I know you will, but I wanted somebody else to.
Oh, no, I don't think it's ever going to come from that party.
Well, we should.
9 tips, correct, all 9. Mm. You tipped Geelong, which, in fact, I was the only one on the panel that didn't.
So I've got no idea what I'm doing.
I wonder how Scotty from Tigerland's going this morning after berating us for all, for most of us tipping Geelong on Friday night.
You tipped 9, Rammer, which has given you a 2-tip lead in the tipping competition. And not only that, you got the face-off again.
The face-off was a little bit of an obvious one.
It was a one-pointer. It was a pretty disappointing category for my man Boomer Harvey on Friday.
Well, Geelong had 9 of the top 10 possession winners on Friday.
But you won it for Brad Levy from Dramana. Cameron Guthrie was going to get the most disposals on Friday night. That was what you selected with your first selection in the draft, and that's what happened. So you've almost had the perfect week. You possibly have had.
Well, a four-pointer would have been nice.
Yeah, that's true.
That's sort of the perfect weekend.
That's true.
But it was nice. It was a... I'm just pleased that I'm well ahead of Whitey.
Smacking him to bits is what you're doing.
You know, person that thinks he understands and knows football.
You're 6 tips ahead of Whitey.
That's
6.
Right.
Are you okay with that, Adam?
I'm not concerned at all. It'll be much more satisfying when I overhaul him.
6 tips.
Well, the problem is, Whitey, for the remainder of the season, you tip first. So I listen to your tips.
What do you mean?
Well, I can change.
On Friday.
I can change the routine.
Why?
Well, because it would be more fun. That would be more fun.
So what Whitey will do now, he'll start to extend himself, and he'll make even more errors and mistakes.
Well, this is the drama now for our man. He's got to be very careful about how he plays this from here.
I tip who I think he's going to win. That's what I do.
That's what you say on air. That's what you say.
You sort of try to peg one back every week. Is there enough weeks left in the season for you?
All right, let's move on, please.
He gets a bit dirty.
Yeah, no, which I'm is very seeing very comfortably.
Not so sure about that. Now, John's on the road. Wants to get involved early doors with us today. 1-300-652-927. Good morning, John.
Hey, fellas, how are you?
We're going well. How's the market?
Just 3 points I want to make quickly. Jesus, North Melbourne, Collingwood, Essendon, Carlton, all down the bottom, mate. All the power sides, which I don't like. Can you find out a bit of Margaret River surfing results? I know you threw all the other things in. And would you want to be a backman playing these days? I'll tell you what, you can't even touch the forwards. Free kick. It's pretty bad, eh? You're pretty ticky touch some of it. I mean, you've got to go for it, don't you? Sometimes when the ball's coming down, you've got to punch. And I think the umpire's a bit hard on the backman. What do you reckon, boys?
I think, John, that's been happening for a number of years now with the backman. The game's been becoming harder and harder for those guys, particularly those key defenders in marking contests. Obviously, the AFL want more scoring, more attacks. So, yeah, they've made it a lot more difficult on backmen. You know, it was an art to, I guess, chop the arms years ago. My old teammate Dustin Fletcher was a master at that, how he would spoil a lot of times just by chopping arms.
I think what's happening at the moment is that there's clearly been a crackdown on the defenders sort of hugging the forward from behind. So any kind of contact where they're sort of having, you know, touching arms or sort of putting arms around, it's a very easy free kick for the umpire to see. We've always known that when there's the grab of the jumper, again, easy for the umpire to see, particularly when they're seeing that contest from side on. But the hugging is something that they're really cracked down on this
year. Fine. I understand that. But when a forward grabs a defender's jumper to hold him off, that's rarely called.
You're right.
When a forward shepherds the ball through the goals in the goal square, you can get away with murder in a goal square.
There's no doubt about that. It's always been skewed the forward's way.
So I agree with what John's saying. It's a hard gig. That's why you look at Jacob Wiedering yesterday. He was
fantastic.
Outstanding yesterday.
He was fantastic.
He's putting together a couple of really good seasons of football at the moment and showing why he was taken at number one.
Yep.
He's going well. He's going very well. Yeah, it's always been skewed towards to the forward, and even more so these days.
I think that's because your initial reaction is that the forward is going to use his hands to try and muck the ball. So I think that skews your thought process straight away that, well, why would the forward be using one of his hands to grab the jumper of the opponent? Because it you do see them holding each other. The free kick's paid. It's invariably paid to the forward. You see the replay. Oh, gee, I never saw that. Never thought that he was holding as well.
It always depends on what side the umpire is on. The umpire always seems to be on the better side of the forward. In that. So, yep, Tough game for a defender. Very, very tough game. That's why I think those really good defenders are worth their weight in gold. We'll talk about Darcy Moore, I'm sure, a little bit later on, but there's no doubt anymore. Like, just enough's enough. Just leave him there.
It would seem to make a bit of sense there.
Yeah. 19 marks on the weekend.
He wants to know what's happening at the World Surfing Event at Margaret River. Well, the round of 16 has been completed. John Florence is through. So is Griffin Colapinto.
One of the great names, John.
John. Geordie Smith defeated Julian Wilson. Aussie Julian Wilson. Ryan Callinan, too good for Federico Moray. Gabriel Medina went down to Seth Moniz. Matthew McGilvray went... No, he took out Kanao Igarashi.
Gee, that was an upset.
It was a bit of an upset. I was more leaning towards Kanao. Italo Ferreira defeated countryman Shawabelli. And Felipe Toledo defeated his countryman as well, Jason Andre. Now, a lot of Brazilian action there in the round of 16. So the quarterfinals coming up shortly. In the men's division, just getting you the women's results as well. The semi-finals are upcoming. So we've got Bronte McCauley taking on Tatiana Weston-Webb. Doesn't sound Brazilian, but that's what she is. And in one semi-final, then Carissa Moore is up against Steph Gilmore. So we've got two Aussies in the semis. Hopefully an all-Aussie women's final there at Margaret River in the World Surfing League. There you go, John. Happy to help. Now got another caller on the line. Scooter is from Sunshine. Hello, Scooter.
Hello, boys. Look, I want to talk about Essendon selection. Okay, so the last 2 weeks have lost by obviously a goal on the weekend, two goals the week before. Jordan Ridley's playing injured. Now, he's not kicked the ball over 25 metres in 2 weeks. Right knee. And if he doesn't play and we have a fifth person, we'd probably be in both games.
What do you make of that, boys?
You go first, Whitey.
Well, the problem with Essendon, Scooter, is pretty simple. They're giving up too big of a start, particularly when they're playing interstate. And that's something that they need to fix. I think they were terrific to be able to fight back against the Giants when it looked like they were going to get whacked after such a slow start. But if you look back to games against Port Adelaide, games against Sydney, games against Brisbane, they're giving too much of a start. And I think it's showing the new Essendon that they're fighting back into a lot of those games, even the Port Adelaide one. If you look at what happened after halftime, they weren't blown away. But when you're on the road and you're a young team, you can't afford to be giving up the starts that they're giving, and that happened again on the weekend. But I know what you're saying about Ridley. I mean, he's their best and fairest winner. They've got issues with Michael Hurley not in defence at the moment, so they're trying to do what they can do. They're developing Rama, the likes of Francis. I still think Laverde is going really well.
He played well on
Yeah, but yeah, that would be my view on Essendon at the moment.
The Ridley one's interesting. It's sort of like, it looks like they're trying to find a matchup to protect him at the moment. They want him to obviously intercept those. I did notice that myself, but I don't necessarily know, Scooter, if he is a long kick regularly. But Essendon, they didn't give up one lead on Saturday. They gave up two leads. Mm. So first quarter, then third quarter as well, GWS kicked away again on them. So, yeah, they're an interesting watch at the moment, the Bombers. They take you on a ride for sure.
They're one of the best 2-6 teams I can remember for a while, considering their body of work of 8 weeks. They've had, three narrow losses now. But, you know, we'll talk about when Jimmy comes in. Is Ben Rutten happy or is he unhappy?
Well, they've got a sustainable game plan, I think. I think they've got a sustainable game plan. Mm. They might need another defender or two coming in, maybe a smaller defender.
Yeah, a lot of love for a team. It's 6th, 15th in the ladder. Anyway, we'll talk more about that with Jimmy after 7 o'clock. Way too much love and affection for that.
Now, there are a couple of text messages that have already come in about the deliberate out of bounds.
Oh, that was bad.
Now, we've got to remember, though, but before we start, it actually isn't deliberate out of bounds.
No, that's right. Insufficient
intent to keep the ball in play. So I think it's really important that rule is
specifically talking about...
Well, the Cameron Zerha one when he actually shanked it out of bounds going for goal.
That was just the wrong decision.
That would be probably one of the worst decisions I've ever seen in my life.
History of football. History of football.
Yeah.
Just a really bad one. Just a really, really bad one.
We all make mistakes.
Marcus, yeah, that's okay.
Marcus Bontempelli kicked the ball into space for his forwards to lead on to. Slightly off off to the left, ball bounces out of play, given deliberate as well.
Yeah.
That was poor as well.
It's hard to say anything other than that. They're just poor decisions. But I think when the umpires review that, I think when Dan Richardson reviews that, he will come to the same conclusion.
There were a couple of others, though, across the course of the weekend as well, which made me think that, again, like we often talk about, that there was a crackdown or that there was a focus on it during the week when they were doing their reviews. It wasn't just those two. There were quite a few others where you go 50-50 and it went the way of, nope, we're going to pay it. It's a difficult rule to officiate. I still maintain you either got to pay last touch or you don't have the rule at all.
I think there's ways of paying it. Like, it's
no doubt.
I don't think it's that difficult, I must admit.
Well, if you want to try and take the grey out, that's the only way you're going to be able to do it.
That's true. If you really want to make it definitive black and white, that's true. But I reckon there's enough room for grey in the insufficient intent rule. I don't see it being a massive problem in the game.
It's a common sense rule.
It's exactly what it is.
An umpire needs to read the room, read the play in those situations. Now, we all acknowledge that AFL football is really difficult to officiate. Really, really difficult game. There's so many rules. There's more rules than any other in the world of sport. So we understand that. But at the same time, common sense needs to prevail at times when umpiring. Yeah. Read the game like a player. Like, if a supporter will sit there, he can't read the play, for us. An umpire's got to be the same. He's got to read the play. Read it.
Yeah, I mean, the Zerha one's just an error.
That's an error.
Because no one thinks that any forward worth their salt at this level of football,
40 metres out,
wheeling around onto their preferred foot,
would try and
gain territory by kicking out of bounds on right angles to the other side of the ground.
I don't know if he actually gained territory. I reckon it actually went behind in the end.
So that was just an error, and that happens. And Matt Stevick was very good in trying to just diffuse the situation from the audio, from the questioning from the players. And every now and then they'll make a massive blow. That's what happens.
I was at that game.
Didn't cost them the game, I don't think.
For the first time ever, Collingwood were booing when they got a free kick. I don't think the Collingwood supporters could believe it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wanted to see that. But, you know, grand scheme of things.
Yeah, move on.
If that's the biggest issue from the weekend, I think they'll be okay. Mm. I would think.
That was one of the worst games I've seen this year.
Which one? No, it was horrible.
And then Hawthorn West Coast probably topped it. Nearly, at least.
Oh, really? I thought Collingwood North was horrible.
Oh, see,
Gold Coast and Kilda and Collingwood North wasn't a great Saturday. Wasn't a great Saturday afternoon.
I think I'm starting to see what North Melbourne are trying to do now as a football team.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
You're starting to see what David Noble and his team are putting together.
It's execution issues that's costing North Melbourne. Yeah. It's not. They actually do know what they're trying to do. Just often they can't do it.
What they want to do is put enormous pressure on the ball carrier, so try to force the opposition into mistake, then they want to go quick the other way. What happens, though, is they're able to do that for, let's call it 20-25 minutes, whether it's over a quarter or over, you know, two quarters, whenever they do it. Then they get tired, then the opposition are able to get 3, 4, 5 goals in a row on North, and that's what closes the game down for North Melbourne. When they actually move the ball from end to end, they look really good. They look really good. They're young. They've got some really talented young players. So I think early in the season with North, it was like, what are they actually trying to do here? And they obviously got some beatings. But now I'm starting to go, yep, okay. So what I want to see, and I like to look at percentages with a developing team. A percentage of 52 now, they got whacked on Good Friday. We understand that. They need to just start pushing that percentage back up if they can.
North Melbourne and Hawthorn this week. That's their chance. The Kangaroos, that's a real chance for them.
Well, they had their chance on Saturday.
No, they did. They did.
But they will get another one, absolutely, this week against the Hawks, who are pretty thin on the ground.
The Mighty Fighting Hawks.
Mighty Fighting, just outclassed at the moment. Just haven't got the players. Haven't got the depth. Haven't got the
35
players.
Inside 50s wouldn't help.
That doesn't help.
No.
When you're coming up against 63, against one of the more prominent attacks in the competition in recent years. No, not ideal from the Hawks. Not ideal from them. But that's all right. You go through your cycle, and it's the Hawks' turn to be bad at the moment. And that's just their lot.
When
you're obviously a good coach, I think, at times.
The reservation and hesitation in your delivery there hurts my heart just a little bit.
If you were in, let's call it North Melbourne, Hawthorne, Essendon, Adelaide.
Yes.
They're probably the developing teams at the moment.
Yep.
Because I'm not sure, are Hawthorne developing, or are we putting them in the category?
Well, they're a long way from being complete.
Would you be focusing more on attack or defence to develop your team initially?
I would be focusing on attack. Mm. But that's the way I sort of go about it. I think you can coach defence pretty easily. Mm. Attack is a bit
harder. So why, when teams are developing, do they tend to focus more on defence?
I don't think Hawthorn is in that zone, that mode. I think Hawthorn is trying to find a way to win. And we've seen a few times where they make the game the way it was in the first half and they try and stay in the game and then they have a run at it in the second half at some point.
So they'll go, we'll try win the game in 20 minutes of football.
I think that's what they're trying to do. And it's an interesting discussion around Hawthorn about, are they in this development mode or is Alistair Clarkson trying to win as many games as he can? If you look at their list management strategy over the last couple of years and the players that they are bringing in, I don't think they were in this development mode. Let's try and get picks and all these sorts of things. Clarko has been trying to buck the trend. But yesterday it was sort of like, well, it was horrible at quarter time, but Hawthorn was in the game. And there's been a couple of times this year where they've been in the game because they've made it very low scoring and then they try and open it up and score. And, you know, it's worked for them on occasions and it hasn't worked for them in other occasions.
See, Essendon at 745.4 is the second most in the competition.
Which is quite remarkable because going into the season, the commentary around Essendon was how they going to score
with their forward line.
Not just from anyone else, but from the other side of this desk.
No, absolutely.
I agree.
No, absolutely.
You propaganda boys.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
No doubt we're sitting there scratching our head going, where do the goals come from?
I told you 2 minutes Peter would be the difference. You didn't believe me. He's the difference, the big fella.
But at the same time, they've had the
second highest score against.
Getting score against. So it's a roller coaster ride.
It's a real roll the dice type situation. We're either going to score or you're going to score. There's not a lot of in between a few of the Bombers at the moment.
So that's what I'm getting at here. We always hear coaches talk about it's easier to teach defence. It's easier to train defence. So with a developing team, to train attack takes longer, clearly. So when you're in your development cycle, shouldn't that be what you teach?
Oh, it's all about fundamentals, defensive fundamentals.
Fundamentals.
It's easy to teach. It's easy to tell somebody where to stand. But that's what we're told. I'm only going on what we're told half.
Well, you would know. That's right. So you need to be told. Dennis is in Oakley. Hello, Dennis.
Yes, good morning, boys. Doggies and Blues, I watched yesterday. Doggies confirmed what I've been told and what I saw. They are a very good team. Carlton are on their way. They're fine. This time next year, you boys will be saying, haven't they gone and developed extremely well? They have a marvellous array of young footballers there. They're a coming team. I don't know if you put it in that range yourself. But I'd be quite happy if I was a Carlton supporter, even though you lost yesterday, because you saw the quality boiling away underneath.
Well, I'm a long way from distressed watching Carlton yesterday. I mean, they're just not good enough at the moment, Dennis, is effectively what you're saying, to defeat teams like the Bulldogs who are seasoned and ready to roll. I don't think we lose too much sleep. I'd be disappointed that they're in a position 27 points up where you probably could hold on to that game. David Teague said during the week that he thinks their best is good enough to defeat anyone. And we saw some real quality from the Blues yesterday, but we just didn't see it for long enough.
What do Carlton need? Another midfielder, another forward? We know the other forward's there in Charlie Curnow.
Yeah.
What do they... Yeah. Another, what's that one area that you think, okay, they need that to go to that next tier?
I think a good specialist winger and another mid, inside mid. Mm. They got smacked at centre bounce yesterday again. Smacked. That's 2 weeks in a row.
I think they only had one centre clearance in the second half.
The Bombers smacked them the week before, and the Dogs smacked them yesterday. So I think that's clearly an area of concern for them.
The ruck,
I was a bit... Pitnet is
Sam DeConning.
is a really
good... Tom DeConning.
Soldier for him. Tom DeConning back into the team is a really good talent. So they've got the players there. They just don't have them out in the park at the moment. You still haven't got Zach Fisher floating around. Jack Martin's still not there. So there's a bit of quality still missing. Yeah. And then you mentioned Charlie Curnow. There's still a bit of quality missing from that team. And they're just not there yet. They just haven't been good enough in those moments for long enough. And that's what we saw yesterday.
The key for Carlton is holding its nerve as a
club.
Yeah. It's holding its nerve and not getting too disappointed when they nearly beat a good team but can't quite do it. It's whether it's a plus or a minus, or a positive or a negative game for them long term. That's going to be their big challenge.
Yeah, but I think we have to be impressed with the Bulldogs yesterday, as Dennis said. I mean, they're a contender.
Good sign.
There's some concerns about the midway through the game, whether or not they'd be able to get it back. They get it back. Daniel behind the ball again. Don't know why he's doing forward. Daniel behind the ball again. The bonk goes berserk. Everyone's a winner. Happy days.
27 points down. Good sign.
I was talk about it more with Jimmy after seven about one of my concerns with the Doggies going forward from a premiership perspective. But I think there is something that needs to be looked at.
There's only one real concern with Carlton, and that's Patrick Cripps. I still think that's a concern for Carlton.
Oh, there's another one too. We'll talk about after seven.
What's that?
In what
way? Well, he's just not having the impact on games that he had. I mean, he's been a wonderful player for Carlton. He's pretty much had the entire team on his back. But it's not happening for him this year. It's just not. I mean, there's eight games now. Yesterday, there was a situation where he's been Carlton's best player for a long time. Marcus Bontempelli's the Bulldogs' best player. Bont stood up. Patrick couldn't.
Always great to catch up with the Triple Premiership player, Brownlow medalist Norm Smith medalist, and by God, he's handsome this morning. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
We are well.
We are well.
How are you?
I am. I'm great, thank you. That sounded a bit like primary school. Good morning, Mr. Harford.
Why did it go on like that? Why was it drawn out like that?
Because you were there, but you didn't want to be.
It was respect.
But it was a dragged out sooner.
Sitting on the floor with the legs crossed?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Stand back. You try and get your back straight, and people get the back straight. They almost rock back and fall over.
Can you do that anymore?
No chance.
It was either respect or you just simply did not want to be
there. Did not want to be there.
Or I've seen one that's crept into schools. Yeah, you know, the clap to get them to all shut up.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, what if you can't keep the beat? It means you don't have to be quiet.
Well, it's about the other one. It's just praising the child that is sitting there doing the right thing, as opposed to all the ferals that are not. As opposed to in the old days, I was, Bartel, buddy, sit down, shut up. And instead of abusing you, they praised the one who's sitting there and doing the right thing.
Positive reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement, that's right. Everyone wants to be praised, Jim, is the theory.
Yeah, I see. Who are you praising this week?
I'm praising... Who am I praising?
See the plot twist there?
I love what you did about that. I'm praising the Cats.
Yep.
I don't think it's... I think the stories of the weekend are the Cats and the D's. The D's just continue to roll on.
Yep. It's funny. Whitey and I often text when the Cats are playing, and I know the Cats have copped a lot of criticism in the last 3 years, really, about speed, 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 speed. And it's almost like they've gone out of their way to try and say, no, we're smarter than everyone else. We're going to go so slow.
Yep.
And when you watch them put on a performance like they did last night, and even the last 3 to 4 weeks, probably conversion's been an issue, but they've had so many scoring shots. You walk away from games and you go, why were you so buff-headed to think that, we've got the answer, everyone else is wrong? Like, sometimes you've got to acknowledge that everyone saying go quicker is actually more beneficial to your side. Or otherwise, your list management decisions of sinking 3/4 of your salary cap in the front half didn't make sense. So if you wanted to go so slow and play so much in the back line, why didn't you go spend it in the back line?
Yes, that's a fair point. Well, they did that on Friday night.
Awesome.
You've been calling for it for ages, and Ram has been on this for years as well. Just any chance of playing with some speed. They did that. They've invested in Jeremy, and it seems to have made a bit of a difference to things.
And Sean and Isaac.
They were pretty slick. I mean, they blew me out of the water. They blew my mind on Friday. I didn't think it was could be anywhere near that emphatic the way they play against Richmond. Because, I mean, we all have enormous respect for the Tigers, clearly. And a level of respect for the Cats, too, because what they've been able to do of recent years. But the last couple of weeks has been what we've all wanted to see from the Cats for ages.
Coach, to your strengths. Your strengths is clearly that forward line, and that it will be Dangerfield added, Myers is a good player, a good small forward. We've got to acknowledge that. And then whoever else rotates through there as far as the mid-forward rotations is naturally attacking-minded. Like if it's Parfitt rotating through, if it's Higgins rotating through, yeah, any of those types. Menegola occasionally goes to half-forward. He loves to attack. If it's Duncan being parked at half-forward, good ball user who takes the game forward.
Yep.
It's just looking... That was always my issue, looking at the list and what you had on it. Go forward. I'm not saying...
That was the frustration on Chris Scott, or the criticisms of Chris Scott. It wasn't so much that he wasn't a successful coach.
No.
It was more the fact, hang on a sec, you've got all these players, why won't you let them play? Because we saw glimpses of it even last year in the shortened games, that they could just blow teams away when they wanted to. Now we've seen it over, twice now in the last 3 weeks. You think, well, that's the best football that's any team's played this year.
Yeah, and the reason why... The reason why I was so strong on it is because they actually are so disciplined and so well-coached, as you just mentioned, and well-drilled in defending anyway. So whereas some clubs, and we'll probably talk about the Blues and the Bombers and things like that, they get the balance wrong. Geelong's never going to overbalance with not defending.
Mm.
Because they've got such good defenders, such good experience and structure. They know
their DNA.
Yeah, they know what to do. So then that's why you've already got that down. So why are we just keep overemphasising it? As Whitey said, take the handbrake off.
Live a little.
Well, they did that. And 19 goals against the Tigers, not an easy thing to do. Doubled their score, 126-63 Friday night. Now, we don't often start with a Friday night game, but I think they were the story of the weekend, the Cats.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, it's a good point. I think they were. Because I think even though Melbourne sits on top of the ladder undefeated, and we'll get to Melbourne shortly, where they sit in the ladder, not just on top, but in other areas as well. But no one's played that sort of footy, have they? If you look at what they did against West Coast and then what they did against Richmond.
Can I just add one more thing, and we say who it says more about? I didn't walk away going any concerns about Richmond, because we say this each week, they're fine. But it said a lot about the Cats that I think it was a mental hurdle for them. 6 out of the last 7, the Tiggies have beaten them, and it hasn't even been close. It's been an average of 25 points.
Yep.
That's on a rivalry. That's one team owning you.
Yep.
And it's been up by 5 goals and getting beaten by 5 goals sort of stuff. So I think it's just a little hurdle, a little box-ticking exercise. It sounds like the AFL on a Monday morning. They've ticked that box. So that's what it was, another bonus for me for the Cats.
There's a critical mass of injuries at every club. And I think Richmond are right at that point now. You look with Cochin going down last week, now Shane Edwards, another midfielder. So they were dominated through the middle of the ground in the end, Richmond. First quarter, yep, no worries. It was obviously the heat was in the game. Richmond played really well. But once Geelong got rolling, they were starting to step through tackles, which is I think that would be the biggest concern for Damien Hardwick, how easy they were able to do that. Now, you look forward to the ball. You're able to stop one key forward. Sometimes you're able to stop two. But when you got the third there, so you go 6 goals, 5 goals, 4 goals, it's difficult territory. Yeah.
And I think the other pleasing bit that's underpinned it is the physicality they came out with in the third quarter. And that's, I think, what you're touching on. It was noticeable at the game that they stuck tackles, but then they got out of tackles, and there was a physical nature and pressure factor.
Geelong had 130 more possessions, but I think 13 more tackles on the game.
Yeah.
That's...
And that was with Delhouse, who...
Simpson.
He couldn't take a step, and Simpson was gone out of the game. Yeah.
So just on the last thing I wanted to mention on the Jeremy Cameron scenario, since he's come into the team, he's kicked 12 goals, 4 in 3 games. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, at the same time, Tom Hawkins has kicked 8 goals, 3. And Gary Rowan has kicked 8 goals, 3. So that's 28 goals, 10 between that 3. So it's a product, I think, of Jeremy Cameron coming back into the team. But I also think it's a product of the fact that they are playing differently. And Isaac Smith said it. He said that they did see the change against North Melbourne, albeit that it wasn't necessarily on the scoreboard, that he felt that it had changed. And they always said that when Cameron came in, they would try and move the ball faster.
Let's have a listen to what Chris Scott said about the win on Friday night, what it means for Cats fans.
Their trademark almost is that they just overwhelm teams with the way they play. So you need to find a way to stem that and fight fire with fire to an extent, and it's not. Yeah, we had a really good game against them in 2019, midway through the year. And one thing you know is they come back. So Not sure how much this game is going to mean in the context of the longer term, but I think it gives our guys some confidence that they can more than compete against the best.
Never gives away too much, no. Chris, in regards to what it might mean going forward, but there's no doubt that that's an emphatic win and they
massive.
Get enormous West, confidence out of it.
Look, to dismantle West Coast and Richmond the way they did, particularly after quarter time, both games after quarter time.
Yep.
So it's true. I just think Sydney may have exposed a little flaw in Richmond with that launch zone. Sydney attacked that launch zone, so I'm talking about the 50 to 80 metres sort of area at the MCG. That draws the Richmond defenders out. Richmond defenders love to sit back, play off, help out each other. But when you hit that launch zone, you then have to, as a defender, go to your man and play one-on-one. And I just think that's a little flaw that Damon Hardwick will be looking at over the next couple of weeks, thinking, how can we fix this? How can we fix this with our defense? When you kick inside your forward 50, behind center, Richmond love that because the ball comes in high. Okay, so the ball comes in high, you're able to spoil easy, no dramas. When you're that 50 to 80 metres out, the ball comes in lower and flat, you have to be a really good one-on-one defender. And on the weekend, you look at those three main forwards, they've kicked 15 goals between them. Very, very difficult to defend. So I'm just interested to see how Damien Hardwick and his coaching staff adjust if teams are going to continue to attack that area.
Well, they're sitting 4-4 at the moment, the Tigers, after 8 rounds. What we do know is that they've played really all the good teams, and now it really does start to open up for
Richmond,
the Tigers.
They've got Brisbane in 2 weeks.
Richmond are playing finals. Yep. They're playing. Of course, they're playing finals. Let's not be.
Well, they've won premierships from 4-4 with injuries.
Richmond will be top 4.
Yes,
you think?
Yep. Yeah. You can bank it.
Yeah.
The formulator says it.
They'll get numbers back. They'll get numbers back over the coming weeks. Off they go. Don't talk about the formulator.
Mate, did not disrespect the form ladder on a Monday morning. Hasn't been updated yet, so it hasn't been referenced just yet.
It's amazing.
Have you got a sponsor for it yet, or is there still a clean skin cricket bat?
It's amazing how often...
Michael Clark 300 SCG, clean skin.
It's amazing how often the form ladder is not updated, but you still reference it.
Well, it's a very important piece of data.
It's a myth.
It's a Monday morning. It's a Monday afternoon update situation. I can't be bothered doing it Sunday night, especially Mother's Day.
It's very Clive Waterhouse pre-draft. It's a myth.
I don't want to fish here, but I'm going to ask Jimmy this question. How many premierships did you win? How many premierships did you win?
I won 3. He introduces
a triple premiership. How many times you listen?
Listen to your running mate.
Did it start to get not tiring, but did it start to take a toll at any point on that group?
Oh, I can't speak for others, but not for me.
Because I'd imagine winning premierships is fun and you want to keep doing it.
Winning is underestimated as a motivation. I think everyone looks to losing or tough defeats or adversity as being the great motivator. There's a fantastic motivator in winning and being pretty awesome as a team. It's pretty fun. It gives you a lot of energy. You even see it within games, momentum. Kick a couple of goals, energy, you're starting to win. Everyone all of a sudden, geez, they can run a little bit quicker and they can spread a little bit further and... You can train a little bit harder.
Because that's the only question, I think, on Richmond. Because the injuries, we've seen them overcome that in the past. The question is going to be, 3 premierships in 4 years, have they reached the edge? It's a question, it's not a statement, but that's going to be potentially the thing that's going to beat Richmond. It's themselves.
See, I didn't get that sense at the start of the year when I went to Richmond's games. I got the sense that this is a group that wants the destiny or the wants the to be spoken about as
the
one
dynasty.
Of the, yeah,
the dynasty team.
Yeah, but
They've already got that.
But it's now going
to be the best team of the modern era.
Yeah, they want that. I get that sense when I see Martin play and Cochin and these sort of guys, the way they go about their business.
They'll
be fine.
Yeah, you always want to challenge the best. So every team that comes up against Richmond is going to push as hard as they possibly can. The reality is now where they sit, They've been hunted. I think now they can go start hunting again, the Tigers, of where they are.
They will win. I think it's 10 of the last 12 have gone down for.
Are they all at the G? I'm not being smart.
No, but... Can't recall.
Because they normally finish with the last 19 at the G.
They've lost a few games at the G this year.
They've got a big travel this week.
They, this week, take on who, Jim?
The Giants at Marvel.
The Giants.
Yeah, it's a massive road game for them. Big travel.
Well, it's an away game.
Yeah, I think they check into some of Dina apartments.
The Quest,
or something,
I think. The Quest.
Yeah.
They get the bus from the Quest.
Gee, not bad. Yeah, have you jumped ship, eh? Have you jumped ship? It didn't leave the Cattery for 150 years, and all of a sudden the Giants have to travel to Victoria, and you're upset after a home game. The only reason you got over the line the weekend was the home game.
Seven home games, mate.
Richmond's next four. Yeah, Giants. Egghead. Giants at Marvel, Brisbane away, and then Adelaide and Essendon.
At the G.
Well, that's where Essendon play sometimes too. You know. Yeah. So that's three of the four you'd give them straight up, and then Brisbane.
Then they've got the bye,
and they should win that too.
Yeah, they'll get that one.
Well, they'll lose
the game after the bye.
Now that's Geelong's gag.
That's is that what they do.
Yeah,
that's Geelong's
Richmond.
Gag.
Richmond.
Well, they got West Coast and Perth.
Yeah, they'll beat them. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a month's
time. What do you
want
to talk about next?
Let's go to the D's.
Go D's.
The other story of the weekend. They were fantastic in their win over Sydney, who, in fairness, were also very, very good. It was a really good game of footy, and I reckon John Longmire will be sitting there going, you know what? We're okay. Mm. We're okay. We put up a really good fight, had the game in control for a little while, then the best team in footy fought back. He said as much after the game that they are the best, the D's. And they found another way, Jim. They didn't get it all their way, but they found another way to continue this amazing momentum to start the season.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Swans first. They had opportunities to win that game. After Callum Mills kicked that goal, I think they had three or four inside forward 50s and, you know, not easy opportunities, but still opportunities. And they just, fundamentals and moments cost them in the end. When after Callum Mills kicked that goal, there was just a couple of fumbles, and we know that's the worst thing in today's footy.
Yep.
You fumble the footy, it's over.
Yep.
Teams swarm on you, even your team, they're all caught out of position because they've expected you to take the ball cleanly and they've made their decision off that.
Yep.
So you get caught out on the rebound. So you'd be looking at that and thinking, oh, well, it's just some skill errors and some moments and decision-making that's hurt us. And also you had the fact that McLean and Buddy, that wasn't normal Buddy.
That wasn't Buddy.
They had eight marks and zero goals between them. You go down the other end, McDonald and Brown, these sort of guys. Yeah, kick goals and dominated. So your key posts weren't good in a few moments. But Melbourne, they've got the contest covered. They've got the outside covered now. And they've got depth in all positions. Well, like, what else do you want if you're Simon Goodwin?
No, there's not too much more he would be wishing for at the moment, I wouldn't think. They were terrific. I'll tell you, you talk about fumbling. Clayton Oliver.
He doesn't.
He might be the cleanest player I've seen in years. And it was a wet night, raining on Saturday night, slippery ball. He was playing a different game at times. He must have had the Travis Cloak super gloves on. The super gloves on. He refused to fumble the ball. I reckon he was even trying at one stage to fumble. He just couldn't.
Well, based on what he puts in his hair, he always got to put his hands in his hair. And
that might be where he gets it from.
Yeah. Well, he puts Grippo in his hair.
So you were...
He's remarkable.
I used to do that.
What?
Sorry, whoa.
Yeah,
time out. You did what?
Used to put that in the hair. You didn't have to worry about gel or anything for a couple of weeks. My mum didn't like it too much because it used to get on the pillow.
The steel wool didn't need too much. Grippo
in the hair.
Guaranteed, it used to make it go straight. Can you believe I used to get my hair straight? It was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I wasn't expecting that.
Anyway, what you were there on Saturday night watching them.
I was.
What was the... If I had to say to you one thing that stood out about Melbourne that has changed from previously or that have made you change your view on Melbourne, and what's their biggest number one strength?
I think the biggest strength is their off-ball running and their willingness to defend. That was clear for me on Saturday night. Sydney, really good at times, were able to expand the ground and try and stretch them and find holes. The Demons didn't let them. They just shut everything down. They worked off their opponents to get to the most dangerous, to shut that off. They would cover on the back of that. They'd press from forward to back if they needed to. They'd press from back to forward if they needed to. Their ability to defend, their want to defend an off-ball run is as good as I've seen from any team at the moment. That's the difference. Ball in hand, they're fine. They had some connection issues last couple of years, mid to forward. But they're playing this forward half game because they're prepared to defend all the way through.
They were able to absorb a lot of pressure on Saturday night. Sydney, they brought the head. Sydney had 92 tackles and 35 tackles inside forward 50. So when you're able to absorb that amount of pressure, that's a great sign.
That is a terrific sign for them. Their centre clearances were terrible on Saturday night, albeit they still won the clearances. But I still think the clear change in Melbourne is they're applying pressure. Usually, their pressure's been very inconsistent.
Yeah.
Very, very inconsistent. But now there's a consistency about it. You hear Simon Goodwin talk. You hear the players talk about this selflessness that they have now. So there's a real sort of, I think there's a real maturity now about Melbourne, rather than in the past, you sort of sit there and go, oh, I wonder if he's going to stand up. I wonder if he's going to do this. I wonder, you know, now you've got Oliver, you've got Petrarca, May and Lever are terrific down there. Tom McDonald's having a terrific season.
Well, no, none of them really dominated the game. It was just a team effort.
I thought Oliver. Yeah, Oliver
yes,
was a dominant player.
But he's like that most weeks.
Tom McDonald was a dominant player on the weekend as well. So.
But you know what I mean? Like, they all contributed.
Yeah.
But it's the ones that outside the supposed big names and stars that I admire. It's Neil Bullen, it's Spargo, it's Rivers.
Harms came back in, was really good.
Harms was enormous. Yeah. James I really Jordan. Like him. Jimmy Jordan wearing the number 23, which just makes sense. He was good. Harrison Petty Rivers. Did a great job. Harrison Petty coming in and playing that Tomlinson role allowed Lever to do his thing. Correct. So the system works. They've become a system team.
Yeah.
We hear Richmond talk about it all the time. We just play a system. Well, Melbourne have become that team, and it's going to stand up in the finals.
Yeah, maturity is the word that Rami used, and I think I've used it each week with Melbourne. They don't panic now. When the opposition comes at them, I think they used to shuffle the magnets around.
Oh, yeah.
What you're talking about, half, I agree with. It's that cohesion in defence. All right, we all slide across. But I think there's this understanding, and I like to call it the butterfly effect of footy, that they actually celebrate Spargo and Neil Bullen's role just as much as Oliver and Max Gawn.
Correct.
Yep.
Because they all actually know how that affects each other's game. And when I've gone and watched them live, you go, okay, they get it. And I remember doing that when Richmond in 2017, when they were playing the Hawks, this side has got it, because they actually understand Castagna is just as important as Cochin is to each other, because they all make each other go. And that's the system you're talking about. It's understanding that by you doing this role or you just getting back and defending, all those little things allows everyone else to shine and actually, show their best football.
To back up Daniel's point about how they're working hard when they don't have the ball, Melbourne is ranked number one for points conceded for the year. So the only team in the competition to have conceded less than 500 points, 492 to be the best defence. Interestingly, the top four are the top four in points conceded for the season.
But the other thing even in attack is, you mentioned that mid-forward connection. I think they used to have a lot of players who thought, well, I'm the man, I'm the one who's going to kick it inside, I'm going to break off that really nice one on the lead, and it slowed them down. We're seeing a lot more, there's the overlap, give it to him.
Yeah.
There's Langdon running, I know he's boundary side, but we take territory, you give it to him.
Yeah.
Because then, do you know what he does next time? I'm going to run again because I might get the footy, which actually puts us in a good position to defend if he doesn't get used. So the next one keeps moving, and once you start doing that,
leapfrog.
Yeah, it becomes infectious.
Yep.
Melbourne had a lot of players in the past that wanted to make sure that they got possessions or kicked the goal to make sure they played the following week. So I need to get my 20 or 30 possessions, or I need to kick a goal or two to make sure I'm in the team next week. That's gone now. That's gone. It's pure team.
That's the key, I think. That's the key for the Demons. Sydney, just by the way, don't lose any sleep. I think they were fantastic. John Longmire coached his socks off. Took Maxi Gawn out of the game. Almost had him playing back pocket at one stage. Yeah. Well, in fact, not one stage, a lot through the evening to get him out of the area that they wanted him in. I thought they played a hell of a game. Luke Parker's second half was out of this world. So they've got a lot to look forward to, the Swans. They don't lose too much sleep over that one. They sit still six on the ladder, five and three. And played three of the top four teams from last year.
We haven't given enough credit to Mills going into the midfield now. He's
a good player.
He's gone in there with ease. Some guys struggle, Jim, going in there and playing that role, but he goes in, gets his possessions, kicks his goals.
He plays like a 28-year-old. Yeah. He looks a bit like a 28-year-old as well.
It's not easy going from defence to mid. It's a hard one. Well, you've done that, Jim, through your whole career.
Well, it was comfortable, but yeah. No, but just on the Callum Mills thing, that was one of the things they did late last year when their season was starting to nosedive. They moved him into the midfield, and because all sides were doing was, let's just take him down to the cage. As soon as you got the Callum Mills matchup, the forward scout would be, get him deep, get him deep. And he was just getting taken out of the game or left one-on-one on an island against bigger opponents. So at least then up in the midfield, he can play like a defender, but through the midfield, play on and off his direct opponent.
Sydney's next five games are against teams currently not inside the top eight.
Yeah, I think they'll give themselves a chance to solidify their spot in the eight in the next 5 weeks. The worst rendition of a football club song in the history of mankind.
The
they were reading it off the wall, I'm sure.
That's a good song, too.
All the ring-ins were reading it off the wall. They had no idea what the theme song was. The Ardmona Cats Saturday, won their first game of football for 2,121 days. They don't care about singing the song. They were singing other stupid things through the night, probably with a belly full. Shane Crawford, the Brownlow medalist, Hawthorn champion, is coach of the Ardmona Cats these days, and he was leading the charge for the success on the weekend. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Crawford, well done.
Half, great to join you, Whitey, Rammer, and also Jimmy. It was pretty cool. It was a terrible song after the game. I tell you, and I was so disappointed with, especially all the ones that have been there for 6 years, and they actually didn't know the song. So I couldn't believe it. But anyway, it was a great day. It all worked out really well. And, thankfully we had a win, finally.
Croft, I wanted you to come on and say, look, we're just taking it 1 week at a time. I've seen some green shoots. There's some improvement. Well, what sort of speech did you give them after the game, though?
I said, I'm retired. I'm out of here. No, well, to be honest, it was a pretty cool day, obviously, because the reserves had won, and they hadn't won for 6 years. So that was pretty cool. And then, obviously, the seniors having a win. But we had, a 99-year-old guy who comes to training. Glenn, he comes to training on Tuesday and Thursdays, and he comes to games, and he's, he just sits in the corner and takes it all in. So we just let him sort of tell us what he thought, and then they were taking it back to his nursing home. So we just let him take centre stage, and it was pretty cool. So all the players got around him, and it was a pretty special day when you get the community up and about, and especially the people who have been connected to the footy club for a long time. It was pretty cool.
Hey, Croft, I know you love your footy, but why are you doing it? Like, it's obviously a monumental job of what you're doing and what you're doing for the community, but, yeah, it must be really, really difficult still.
Well, I can guarantee it. I'm not doing it for the money. it's definitely a love job, but, look, I initially thought, what's going on with this team? And I'd actually watched them a couple of times. I ended up watching their last game a few years ago because I just wanted to get an idea of what was going on, wrong. And not only that, I was familiar with the area because I grew up only an hour down the road. So they lost by 52 goals that game. And I went, wow, okay, but we've got to help this side somehow. And so it happened that they were kicked out a few months later, not being competitive, and they weren't being run very well. It was pretty much coming up to their 100th year. And I thought, let's try and help. And maybe this is a good way to just document the story on trying to help a team get back and going again. But pretty much the team's taken over more than everything. And, it's just flowed on from there. So it's even pre-season-wise, you can't train them too hard because you break them down or you scare them away. So it's a real sort of drip feed sort of scenario. But I'll tell you what, they have a go, and that's the thing that drew me to them, is like they will try. It's just whether or not they're capable of getting through a whole game, which early on has been a bit of a struggle.
Well, it wasn't a struggle on the weekend. 120 points or so over Longwood on the weekend to get that win after 6 years. Crawford, I imagine there would have been some some hijinks and jocularity late in the game when the game was won and the final siren was just around the corner. There might have been some carry-on. Was there anything that stood out from you, from your players, that you have to bring up in the review on Monday?
No, I did. Well, you should never say... Well, the thing with the team and the feedback they've given me, because I've been very, very easy on them, even when I praise them, you know, they said, oh, I probably shouldn't praise us too much because we don't go well after you praise us, which is often the way. But then again, you know, this team's been bashed for 6 years. Like the captain, Tim, who's been there forever, and he every time he talks about the football club, he just breaks down. He was telling me on the way up on the weekend, he said, over the last 6 years, every game that I've played, I've averaged a 300-point loss, you know? And then he virtually retired a few years ago, the last game that I watched, and I said, you cannot retire on a 52-game loss. I said, you can't have that as your lasting memory. And he is a backman. He ended up kicking a couple of goals on the weekend in the last quarter. He's fasting at the moment because his wife's a Muslim, so he's fasting. So he kept coming off going, oh, my energy levels are low. And so it's just a real juggle. But when you have moments like that and you see what it actually does to the community and those type of players, you know, they're so appreciative. And I'd imagine he's still partying right now. He's never going to forget that moment.
Well, he's going to join Gareth Hall a little bit later on this morning, Tim. So we'll look forward to listening to how he's tracking after the victory on Saturday.
So Croft, how have you done it? Have you brought in a lot of new players, or have you just trained the ones that were there? What, how have you been able to turn it around?
It was very tempting to bring in a whole new team. But, that would, especially pre-season-wise, I'm driving back to Melbourne going, what on earth am I doing? We couldn't move the ball from even from full back to out of the defensive 50. But no, the thing is, it's just been consistent and training. We've had a few City boys coming down, but to be honest, and you know, I don't want to knock my City boys around, but they're players that have played a lot of footy and they're towards the end of their career, but they're just really good on field leaders, so they can actually teach us to spread out a bit and structure up a bit. You know, when there's a ball up or a boundary throw in, or when the ball's going in the forward line for the opposition, we can just block a bit of space. So, you know, I was really conscious of making sure it's got to be the locals that are getting their club going again, because they're the ones that are going to keep it alive and going forever. But I can assure you, when you do have just one good player who can come in and help, it definitely makes a big difference, because they certainly not only coach on the field, but certainly help out on the field as well.
I felt like in the second half, even though we couldn't quite narrow the gap, I thought we'd started off in the right vein to bridge that gap, and the lads just really saw it through.
They saw it through. That's what Luke Beveridge was saying about his lads yesterday, talking about the Western Bulldogs and their 16-point win over the Blues at Marvel Stadium. Lachlan McNeil is a Western Bulldogs youngster who's played all 8 games this year. Had another good one yesterday for the Dogs. Joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Lachie.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, pal. Nice to have you with us. Got a bit tight there yesterday. 27 points down. You've been going really well, the Bulldogs. Blues have sort of been in and about the positivity of the season, but you found a way through. What was it in the end? What was the difference?
Oh, it was a pretty challenging game. That was probably credit to Carlton. They played quite well, I thought. And I think it was just the eventual wearing them down of trusting that we were good enough, and when we got our ball rolling in the last quarter, that we'd be able to run over them. So, yeah, it was really good.
Lockie, Jimmy Bartel here. What was the message from Bevo at halftime? Because they're actually pretty good around centre bounces and contested ball, which is a strength of yours.
Yeah, Bevo's message at halftime just was to lift that intensity a bit here, just try and match it and wear them down. Maybe as the game went on, they might fatigue a bit, and then we could get the upper hand there. So, yeah, that was probably his message, I reckon.
A couple of positional changes. Caleb Daniel back to his regular halfback flank. It looked like you guys started to play the game a bit higher from defence, which gave you forwards a bit better look at it.
Yeah, and it probably helped us a little bit around the footy with, like, just a little bit more numbers at the back of the stoppage and keeping 6 forwards and just being a bit more organised up forward to give us a better contest. And, yeah, we moved the ball a lot better later in the game and, yeah, it gave us really good opportunities to score.
A really good story out of yesterday was Buku Kamanis, obviously making his debut, but you see all the scenes from Luke Beveridge telling him he's playing his first game. It was a really feel-good story.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing for Books. He's really great kid. Like, we're really good mates as well. And so to see him get his chance, he'd really thoroughly deserved it after the work he'd put in. And everybody loves him, so it was a really great story.
Can you kind of believe what you're doing at the moment, Lockie? I mean, someone that was picked up in the rookie draft last year, you haven't missed a game, as half mentioned, in a team that's absolutely flying. How do you feel about all of that?
Yeah, you probably go back 12 months ago. It's definitely something I wouldn't be thinking I'd be doing right now. And, yeah, it's certainly been quite a journey and pretty amazing, to be honest. Yeah, really enjoying it, though.
And to be in that forward line where you've got such an amazing midfield ahead of you, coming down the ground with the ball, what's that like?
It's pretty handy. But yeah, we've been very lucky up in the forward line, knowing that the ball's, we're probably going to get pretty good service and we're probably going to get a win out the stoppage most of the time. So it's something that I'm not like particularly used to, and just that luxury of having some of the boys running around the midfield there is pretty handy to have, and really gives you a bit of confidence up forward.
Lockie, who have you gravitated to at the club? Usually when a young player comes in, they see somebody and they go, yep, that's who I'm going to follow. Who's that person for you at the Bulldogs?
Well, we've got quite a few to follow. I probably gravitate a little bit towards Adam Treloar a bit. He's been really good and somebody that I probably look up to and would love to be that type of player if I can develop into that midfielder at the, you know, middle age of my career sort of timing. And, you know, there's other people. Lynn John's been really massive for me, really good relationship with him. And then there's quite a few younger boys, Bailey Smith, and there's a few other boys that I get along with really well as well.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.